Brought to you by the Fund for American Studies. The Fund for American Studies is an educational nonprofit that is changing the world by developing leaders for a free society, offering transformational programs that teach the principles of limited government, free market economics, and honorable leadership to students and young professionals in America and around the world. Download a free ebook to learn how you can become a champion for liberty at teachingfreedom.org.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome to The Dan Proft Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline, filling in for Dan tonight. And we are joined by Carol Markowitz, columnist at the New York Post. Carol, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Carol, you've got a column at the New York Post, which is titled, How Cancel Culture Keeps COVID-19 Lockdown Doubters Silent. Let's talk about that. First of all, cancel culture, that might be the phrase of the year for 2020. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what do we mean by cancel culture?
So I'm specifically referring to people's livelihoods being targeted because of a fairly innocuous opinion. A cancel culture is not just disagreeing with somebody on something, but it's taking that next step and taking it to their boss, for example, and threatening the company that they work for and sort of really going beyond. And so when I say cancel culture, I try to make it clear, I'm not talking about like somebody who's mean to you online. Like everybody gets that. And I don't think that we can really do very much to stop that. But what I'm specifically referring to is if you point out the emperor has no clothes with a lot of these COVID regulations, you could literally be targeted at your employment place. And that's really what's so scary.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things going on here, Carol. That's the worst of it. I totally agree. That kind of going after people in irrelevant personal ways is really scary. But the other way you get canceled, and this really applies to debate over COVID, is you just can't get your opinions or your data read on social media. I mean, if you on YouTube, for example, if you post something that disagrees with the recommendation of the World Health Organization, which is not by any means covered itself with glory, right? The COVID thing. But if you try to post something that disagrees with them on anything, on any basis, you'll get deleted.
Well, what's funny is that well into the summer, the WHO was still saying that the only reason to wear masks is if you're around somebody who is COVID positive. So, you know, it's funny that that's sort of become the guideline because for a very long time, they were saying masks are not necessary. And it's almost like they got pressured into saying masks are necessary because they really held on to that. No, you only need to wear masks if you're around sick people thing for quite a while.
No, that's exactly right. And like CDC, the World Health Organization has changed its mind from time to time, kind of made things up as it goes along, which is okay. You know, as organizations get more information, there are times when they should change their minds, should change their advice.
Absolutely.
But that just highlights the importance of free debate and dissemination of facts.
Well, that's exactly it. And I would say that I'm fairly moderate on whether, you know, what we should do about COVID. Wearing masks in stores seems very logical to me. Wearing masks outside seems a lot less logical to me. But you can't have that argument. It has to be mask up and stay home and that's it. And there's only one way to have the conversation. And that's really what the problem is to me here. Also, I was in March calling for schools to close when we didn't know what was happening and schools around the world had closed. And yet my husband had stopped going into Manhattan to work, but my kids were still going to school, and that made no sense to me. So, I feel like I've changed with the facts, and it's okay to do that. And once we learned that kids weren't majorly spreading this thing, you know, in the beginning they thought that the kids were super spreaders. And so once we found out that they weren't, it's okay to change your position and say, well, and now I think schools should be open. And it's scary how people are not allowed to do that because there's only one acceptable answer for everything. And it's only the one position you're allowed to take.
So in your column in the New York Post, you talk about a reader who wrote to you. And I'll just quote here. She said, thank you so much for speaking out to open schools. I can't do it myself for obvious reasons. I completely agree with you about opening schools in September, but I'm afraid I'll be targeted at my job. And this is what you're talking about in terms of cancel culture. Mm-hmm. You know, this mother would like to speak up on behalf of opening the schools. And by the way, our children are just being devastated by this. I mean, the damage that's being done is unbelievable. And yet, there's only one acceptable side to this argument.
Right. Right. That's it. And I've got dozens of, if not more, messages like that, because I've been writing about this for a while. So as I said, I in the beginning, I was at the forefront of closing schools. And then once the data came out that kids weren't the major infectors, then I quickly switched to, we need to focus on open schools. This is the priority. I don't know how anything else can be the priority except for schools right now. And so since around May, I started writing about how important it is to get schools open and how insane it was to me that, for example, in New York, Governor Cuomo put schools in the very last open category. So there was a question of whether or not they'd be open in September. So all of this is just, it's all part of the same thing where you can't actually say this anymore. And you can't, if you say this, then you want teachers to die. And if you don't want to say everybody should stay home all the time, then you're not taking COVID seriously. I'm taking COVID seriously. My family and I get regular tests to see extended family. We are extremely careful. We social distance. We do everything that is, you know, required scientifically of us. We just won't do crazy things that make no sense. And I think that's where the line has to be drawn.
Well, and you have to look at both costs and benefits. Now, I'm a skeptic mm-hmm. when it comes to lockdowns and masks. I mean, I study these data carefully, and I can't really find that either lockdowns or wearing masks are having any significant benefit. But I'll tell you what is undeniably true is the costs, the human costs mm-hmm. of particularly the lockdowns. And when they shut down the schools and they go to all remote learning, the percentage varies from place to place, but something like 30 or 40% of the kids are just gone. They don't log on, they don't participate, they don't listen to lectures, they don't take tests, they're just gone. And I mean, what we are doing to a generation of young people is inexcusable.
Absolutely. You know, I have a 5-year-old, he's in kindergarten. Remote kindergarten is not a thing. It's just not. And we're continuing on as if this is something that we can make work, and we just can't. And, you know, my big concern is that schools don't open in September either. A lot of people are very optimistic about the vaccine, and I keep pointing out, well, they haven't even started trials for vaccines for kids under 12 yet. So how are schools opening in September? And I feel like there's a lot that we need to face, that what we've done with these lockdowns has been so harmful and so wrong and just hasn't worked. And again, back to the cancel culture thing, you can't face it because you're not allowed to say it. And, you know, back to the masks also, I live in a very leftist neighborhood in Brooklyn. In March, masks were stupid. Everybody was posting on social media how dumb it was to wear masks. And suddenly it went from masks are dumb to masks are mandatory overnight.
And the irony is, it's kind of like 1984. I mean, the official line changes, but whatever it is, you can't disagree. So another quote from your piece here at the New York Post, you write, one liberal mom who frequently engages me online anonymously told me she's afraid of having her livelihood targeted for speaking out on schools. Quote, I will not use my real name and identity because it is widely known that the activist community purposely baits people with racially charged statements for the sole purpose of trapping someone and reporting their content to an employer. This is cancel culture, and I mean, it is really sinister.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I was born in the Soviet Union. I feel like I've seen this before. I've watched, you know, I've heard the stories from my family before about how there was only one right thing to say, and if you didn't say it exactly right, then you could be targeted. And we watched it happen all over the country for the last few years. It's scary. I'm afraid for these people. I really am. And what I've said a number of times, so people say to me, like, well, if it's cancel culture, why aren't they coming after you? And I say, well, there's only so much they can do to me. Conservative media people, conservative writers are sort of outside that circular firing squad. What are they going to do? Call the Post and say she wrote something bad? Well, they know that. So, you know, I think that for those of us who can speak up should, and we have to protect the people who feel like they can't. And we have to get them to a point where everybody can speak their opinion without having their livelihood threatened.
You know, you make the point in your column, too, that one of the mantras here is believe in science, you know, follow the science, as if science were kind of a body of dogma, like the sayings of Chairman Mao or something, where you can look up what's the right answer.
Believe in science.
And of course, science isn't anything like that. Science is a method. And what science demands more than anything as a method is freedom, is open inquiry and open debate and discussion. And it's kind of ironic that science really is what these people are trying to squelch.
We know that the numbers don't support these kinds of closures, but we're going to do it anyway. And we're only going to do it in some places because we feel like it. And it's crazy. It's really crazy.
All right. We will be back with more from Carol Markowicz of the New York Post after these messages. 'Cause you ain't worth the salt in my tea.
This is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are talking with Carol Markowicz of the New York Post. And Carol, before the break, you said something that I didn't know, which is that you were actually born in the Soviet Union and came to the United States as a young girl. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, I was born in the Soviet Union. I was born in Russia. And I grew up with the serious stories that came from my grandmother and my parents about how it was to have your opinion stifled and how you not only had to say the right thing, you had to like say it in the correct way with the correct sincerity. And it's really scary. It's really, really scary. I've seen so many things in the last few years. And the funny thing is that I used to kind of dismiss people like, oh, the United States is becoming the Soviet Union. And I'd say, oh, that's a crazy thing to say, you know, like, of course not. But especially in the last year, it's been kind of wild to watch that exact kind of like emoting needs to happen in the right way. And, you know, as I said earlier, I feel like a lot of this is right now left on left circular squad, that they're sort of just doing this to each other, and conservatives and people who are right of center are outside that conversation and outside that circular firing squad. But it won't be long before we're all in on it, because that's just how it goes. It spreads, and, you know, having to say the right thing and or else is something that gets enforced. And it's scary to watch.
You know, Carol, over the years, as you know, I've been active on the internet since, I guess, 2002. And before that, too, as an activist writing in newspapers and magazines as kind of a hobby. But over the years, many people have said to me, oh, you're so brave. You know, you're so courageous.
Right.
And I would just say, oh, yeah, well, thank you. But what I was always thinking to myself is, are you kidding me? I mean, there are brave people in America. They're like fighting in Afghanistan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But for the idea that it is courageous for an American to say what he thinks, it always seemed to me to be absurd. I mean, of course I can say what I think. Everybody can. But I've been stunned. I've been stunned at what we've seen over the last year. You know, the idea that the governor of a state can issue an order that literally says you must all stay in your houses except to the extent that I give you permission to go out, and to see Americans just obey. I mean, I'm shocked at that.
Right. I've been so shocked at it. And, you know, what's even worse is watching places like in Europe protest these kinds of things. And in America, that we just haven't seen those mass protests. I think people are so compliant, and it's been really eye-opening. And it's funny because you have like Florida, for example, has become sort of like the promised land of Florida, where they get to do whatever they want, and their cases are in line with other places. And so they are not experiencing this, you know, mass death that people keep assuring us is around the corner if we just don't listen to the Democratic governor of our state. And it's crazy that we've allowed this to happen. It's really hard to watch. I really thought Americans would rise up. I thought, you know, even in in liberal areas, I thought when they took away schools, I was like, no, parents are not going to stand for this. And then parents completely didn't do anything. They completely didn't do anything. They just let it go on. And it was only small pockets of activism by parents that, you know, was happening at all. So it's been really disappointing.
It's been really disappointing. There are a few beacons of freedom, as you mentioned. Florida is one. I was in Florida for 4 days just a week ago, and I mean, it was a real breath of fresh air in more ways than one.
Right.
Normal life going on, restaurants open, bars open, you know, normal activities. Yes, there was a certain amount of mask wearing and so on, but a totally different feel from what we see in my home state of Minnesota, for example. Another one is South Dakota, my home state of South Dakota, you know, where Governor Kristi Noem, on constitutional grounds, has refused to issue executive orders. Like Ron DeSantis in Florida has been subjected to unbelievable abuse from people who never noticed her before. The Washington Post, the New York Times, the Associated Press. You know, I mean, it's really amazing how the powers that be line up uniformly on the side of really of totalitarianism.
Right, and it's the groupthink that's so disturbing, because it doesn't give any air to any disagreement, and it doesn't allow you to say, wait, this makes no sense. Why are we doing this? People are hurting by this. Why would we continue with these policies that make no sense and are not helping? Like, how does California, you know, with a straight face, continue lockdowns? There was a great headline in Politico last week, which was like, California has run out of reasons for why their lockdowns are not working. And it's like, yeah, they've run out of reasons for why lockdowns are not working, because lockdowns don't work. And that's it. It's over. Lockdowns are over. Politicians just need to face it.
You've got a piece in the New York Post. This pandemic has politicians treating the public like children. I'll just get there. There's so many examples of this, you know, and we've been talking about some of them. But here's another one. Dr. Fauci has now openly acknowledged, I said some things that weren't true, but it was what people needed to hear at the time. You know, I gauged where the public was at, and I changed my story. I said things that weren't exactly true, but, you know, I did it for your benefit.
Right.
I find this shocking.
I think it's so damaging. It's extremely damaging that he admits that he lied about various things like masks and our what numbers we'll need to have herd immunity. I feel like people are just, they're hurting and they're tired and they don't see their families and they're not around people they love. And it's just a very dark time. And to have these officials lie so openly, it's been hard. And like, the hypocrisy from these politicians has been doubly hard to watch them do things that we're not supposed to do, or have Dr. Birx go see her parents because they're struggling. Well, yeah, all of our parents are struggling.
Or Gavin Newsom, you know, having dinner with a lobbyist at the French Laundry. Right. What is it? $800 a plate or some darn thing. I think there's a deeper point. Hypocrisy, obviously, and we've seen that over and over from these politicians, and frankly, especially from some of the more draconian Democratic politicians. But really, I think the more important point is, if Gavin Newsom really believes that socializing in a restaurant, in a group outside your family without wearing a mask, posed a severe threat of death, you know, which is what he keeps saying. If he believed that, he wouldn't do it. And it's the same with all these people. And the fact is, they are imposing rules on the rest of us that they don't believe in.
Exactly. I've compared it to sort of the climate change activists who, you know, sail on their yacht by themselves. Like, if they really believed, like, they wouldn't do it. And I think that the hypocrites, the COVID hypocrites, and I've kept a running list on Twitter, have been also just damaging to their own cause. If they really think that anybody is listening anymore, they're not. And the point that I make in the piece about how politicians treat us like children, again, I feel like I'm fairly moderate. I'm not saying that COVID isn't scary. And I have an elderly mom and elderly in-laws, and I'd like to protect them. So, for example, for Thanksgiving, our whole family got tested in advance, and we were very careful in advance so that we could be together. And it would be so much more helpful if politicians would say, look, here's a way to do it in a safer way. You want to see your family, this is how you do it. Instead of saying, no, just don't see your family. Don't see them for a year. Don't see them for 2 years. It's not going to happen. I think people can't live like this. And if they had better guidance from their elected officials, it would go a lot further to containing this thing.
All right, Carol Markowicz, thank you for being on the Dan Proft Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks, Carol. That was really fun, really interesting.
Thank you. That was really great. All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.